A day later than planned, but I'll let you know that already. I told you I wasn't going to record on Juneteenth. Just saying. My name's Unkwa Sonia, and I'm back in my bag again. Thanks for joining this journey, however long it goes, every Tuesday and Friday. Fridays for the long form version of our guest. Tuesdays for the full episode. It's going to be Wednesday this time around because I don't mind saying again, I wasn't going to record on Juneteenth. I did do something else on Juneteenth, which I'll get to toward the end of the program, but we will have a special guest that works at the Worldwide Leader in Sports. But I'd like to start our time together talking about moving. And I don't mean like going from a house to an apartment. I don't mean going from one job to the next. In the case of professional sports, we're talking about going from one city to another and all the collateral damage that comes with it. And we're going to start in Oakland because I have a very good friend who's a diehard Oakland Athletics fan. And one thing he shared in the group chat is that once the A's leave, and maybe I should temper that by saying I'm holding out hope that everything falls through, even though it was passed in the Las Vegas legislature. Basically, the second team from Oakland could be going from Oakland to Las Vegas again. They already lost the Raiders, and now the A's looking right behind. Legislature passed it, all that other sort of stuff. But the one thing my friend told me, he was that once they leave, I'm not like watching baseball again. Like there's no reason for me to be a fan of any particular team. And it really just shows that when you look at how important like sports are to a community or identity, it's a really big deal. I could go through the nuts and the bolts of the deal about the fact that by going from Oakland to Las Vegas, you're going down a multitude of market sizes, which still matters depending on who you ask. I could talk about the fact that Oakland has been behind that team through thick and thin forever. I could talk about the fact that the A's have defined what it means to be fiscally conservative in Major League Baseball with the advance of analytics and through all of that trouble and all the penny pinching, still have yet to see a World Series championship since Charlie Finley ran the team. But instead, I want to focus on that reverse boycott because it was really interesting to me. Because the first few months of the season, right, I kept watching and seeing how disappointed fans were at the fact that the team was the way it was. By the way, it was totally gutted, right? This is a franchise that has a history of being just a little bit better at holding homegrown talent, a little bit better than the Marlins. And that's not a compliment because the Marlins dismantled two world championship teams in the past few decades. Just saying. But when it comes to the A's, their fans had a reason to be upset. I even suspect through articles I've read that the team is upset because they know they're being shopped. They know they're leaving Oakland. And they also know that they play in one of the worst professional stadiums in the country. Like, think about that for a second. Imagine going to work every single day. The bathroom's not working right. Things are broken. And it's not like the owner of the company doesn't have it. I've never understood how we as a public can just sort of allow the billionaires that hold the money, that hold the bread. I don't understand how we all of a sudden allow them to coast and then cry poor when they want public money to move somewhere else. Because even if the A's were losing money, you'd have to look at what they spend it on because they're clearly not spending it on the ballpark. They're not spending it on the roster. So where's all the money going? If this team is bleeding all of this supposed money. But back to the fans, because growing up with a team and having it ripped from you in adulthood, it's a really rude awakening to how life really works. And sports is sort of supposed to be a respite from that. And it stinks that it isn't. And see, since I moved to Connecticut, I see Whalers gear everywhere. Still to this day. And with the demise of the Coyotes out in Phoenix, all of a sudden, there's a little bit of bubbling hope that maybe the team can come back. I don't know how likely it is. There isn't an arena ready for them. They're, I don't know who this ownership group is that apparently the governor has sort of gotten together to pitch to the NHL, because it very much seems, from what I'm reading, that Connecticut's making calls and the NHL is taking messages. Me personally, I hope that's not the case. Shoot, it would change the nature of my job significantly if the Whalers came back to Connecticut, or if they had another name, or whatever it is. If the NHL came back to Connecticut, that's great in a lot of different ways. Unless, opinion, it requires more public money. Because I looked at my tax bill. I was mad in April. Maybe a lot of y'all were too. But when it comes to movement and teams and all this sort of stuff, it just kind of sucks the fun out of everything. And don't get me wrong. I said it earlier, right? Sports is supposed to be a respite from real life, but sometimes real life comes in, does what it does best. It turns things topsy-turvy, makes you cry more than you wanted to. It makes you wonder whether or not what you believed in is really worth it anymore. But the best thing that I can say to put a bow on this entire thing when it comes to Oakland specifically, those fans have a right to do whatever they feel like they need to do. Because I highly doubt they're going to jump to be Giants fans. Not quite sure how many of them are going to go pick either LA team. They've got a right to grieve, and I hope I see all the throwback Eric Chavez jerseys. I hope I see the Miguel Tejada jerseys. I might even be okay with seeing a Jermaine Dye. No, I like Jermaine Dye. But even from those mid-2010 athletic teams, shoot. Sonny Gray, Josh Donaldson, I can't wait to see all of those jerseys flood Oakland. How's that for a silent protest? And somebody would still get paid. Cold world. Yeah, you know what time it is. It's crossover time. This is going to be fun. There are two reasons why it's going to be fun. Number one, I'm not sure he knows that the interview is going to start this way. Number two, the internet brings friends together. Bet this brother 2 years ago when I moved up to Connecticut. He is the guy. And if you don't know him, you will know him. Scooby Magaza. Working at the Worldwide Leader. I said he worked down the street. Down the street meant Bristol. But Scooby, my man, welcome, bro.
What's good, my boy? Thank you for having me on.
So, the biggest reason why I call this the crossover is because I like to take people who are proficient in one thing and ask them about their experience in another. Mm. You played college football, but I also know that you got moves. And you fake sing from time to time. And by fake, I mean you hit notes a little bit.
Oh, stop it.
So I want to know, growing up, what was your experience with music, the arts, and stuff like that?
So my dad is an artist. He played in the church choir, played on the guitar, and sometimes he would sing. So he's always been into instruments. And when I think back of when I was a kid, I wanted to learn how to play the guitar the same way that he did. And he started to teach me a little bit when I was younger, but too busy, things just happened. I got bored and sports became my thing. But there is that tie with my dad being a musician. And even now he plays the piano, the guitar, sings, all that. And he puts together church services every Sunday.
He puts them, so like he picks the songs and teaches the parts?
Yeah, yep. He was in the band and everything. My dad was a big time musician and he still enjoys to play instruments, has all different types of instruments in the house as well.
That is so dope. Yeah. So when did, was there ever a juggling act between having to do the music that you were forced to do before sports, or was there a point where you said, nah, this is it, I know what I'm doing?
I think when I was younger, you're a kid and you're presented with all these different things. You're trying to figure out if you're interested in it or not, if you like it. And sports were always something that I found intriguing. And my mom said to me when I was older that she wanted her kids to play a lot of sports. And she wanted her kids to be involved in athletic activities after school, on the weekend, vacation, whatever it is. So I did them all because I was born in Africa, in Zimbabwe. I did it all from rugby, soccer, swimming, cross country, you name it. And it was a great experience as a kid because that's how you make friends. I think sports are one of the best ways to make friends. And not only that, learn some of your best life lessons. So when the music came, I didn't really see the opportunity to make friends and relationships as much as I valued in the sports world, because with music, it's kind of you versus you and you got to learn by yourself. And I think when I was a kid, I was just all about friends and playing with people. So sports is what I was drawn more towards.
It makes sense. What do you like to listen to now? Because I know when you get ready to go on air, is it a vibe thing for you? Is it a focus thing for you? Because for everybody, it's different. And I'll be honest, for me, it like varies by the day. Sometimes it's vibes. Other times it's, I got to go in and get this done.
It depends on the show. But I will say when I worked in local news, I always had to get my vibes right. So I'm playing 80s, I'm playing 90s hip hop, I'm playing whatever can get me almost dancing at my desk. My coworkers would laugh because some of them would even tell you I would have big headphones on my desk, Beats, so I could just hear nobody. I need to be in my own world because the energy that you have right in your script is what you want to reflect on television. And I had a standing desk and I'm sitting there typing like this. You know what I mean? Vibe. And through that energy and through that feeling, I found joy in the script writing. And sometimes I'd even throw a lyric in there because I'm big on throwing lyrics into my sports cast. So that's kind of how I get going. It's all about the vibe.
You'll get a kick out of this. So I did a report on Paige Becker's finally return to practice. And I said some to the tune of, might be Eminem, or could be Beanie Siegel. But if the question is, guess who's back? UConn's hoping that the answer is Paige Becker.
Ooh, okay.
I felt kind of good about it.
That's a bar. That's a bar.
So tell me this. What was your top song when you really needed to go get it? Or I'll make it easier. Your top three songs when you really needed to go
get it. Ooh, man, that's a hard question. You're going to make it top three. All right. For some reason, Candy.
By Cameo?
Yeah. Hey, you feel me?
Okay, all right.
I don't know why that song gets me going. And one song that just got me relaxed for some apparent reason was Get It Together, Drake. That song.
Off of More Life?
Yeah. Mm. I don't know. It just, the drums, the percussions and that just... it's got me really relaxed. And then third one. What's a good third one? Third one, it can be anything, really. The third one's got to go on the vibe. I'm trying to think what song got me going for my third one. Man, it would be some gospel or something.
Ooh.
It would be some gospel. Lil Kirk.
Ooh! Lil Kirk.
Just, it's all about the vibes, right? So songs that kind of get me dancing or get me to be nice and calm, because the Get It Together song, it just slowed me down. I don't know why. It gets my heartbeat to cool down. Maybe it's just the sound of how it is. But when you've been running around trying to hit deadline, going to three different games, and you get back to the studio with barely any time to write anything and get on air, you still need to focus. So just something to calm me down.
So let me, I want to go in on that just a little bit, because when you look at like what we do in the hustle and the bustle that it takes to get the job done in a certain way, right? It's almost as if the mental approach sort of changes by the day to an extent, right? So I guess what I'm trying to understand, not really just for me, but for anyone else who tries to figure out how they mentally deal with stuff, is it a vibe check the moment you walk in the door saying, how am I feeling today? Is it a matter of evaluating where your highs and lows are? Because that's the sort of thing that kind of interests me.
What really helped me, and I think it can help a lot of people, is the hours leading up to your work day, you're getting your vibe right. You're doing the things that will put you in a good frequency where you can vibrate in good energy when you get to work. Your mental, physical, and spiritual state needs to be balanced. And it's really all about balance, because you don't want to come in too high. You don't want to come in too low. You want to stay even keel and let the day come to you. And being able to understand what emotions you're feeling going in, being able to calm your anxiety before you get into work, and remembering that you're doing something you love. Because when you're doing something you love, it's coming from a place of passion. So if you're feeling bad going into it, you should be able to reverse and switch direction to something good because you're passionate about it, right? It's something that brings you joy. Passion is, it comes from a place of joy. So if something's bringing you down, it's about making sure as you head into work, you're doing the things necessary to get you in a right vibe. And for me, it would be hitting the gym. It would be meditation. It would be spending time with God, spiritual, physically, and mentally. I preach that over and over again. And once you can get yourself in a point of good balance and energy heading into work, everything else should fall into place.
Speaking of falling into place, how does a kid who grew up in Zimbabwe get here and has played every other sport under the sun decide American football is the way to go?
My love for rugby. My love for rugby. When I was in fourth grade in Africa, I'm glad I have memories of when I was out there. And when I was on the rugby team, it was a game that I just fell in love with, of being able to hold the ball and just try to juke out people, fight off anyone who's trying to tackle you. And I was great at it as a kid. So when I came to America, my brother was also a football player, and he also loved rugby, and he ended up playing American football. And it was like, okay, if kids are, if your brother's doing it, you're also going to look into it.
Of course.
And it correlated well with rugby, and my love for rugby ended up being transferred over to my love for football.
High school, then college. You've told me this story. I think you probably told it a couple other people. But I'm so curious to know when you decided that talking about sports for a living is what you wanted.
Senior year. It was a senior or junior year. One teacher, Mr. Corbett, I'll never forget it. We were having a conversation at the end of the class, and he was one of those teachers who took the time out to get to know his students, had conversations when class was over, and the students felt comfortable enough to be in a room with him, opening up. And he's asked me, Scooby, what do you want to do with your life? What do you want to become? Obviously, football was my love, my passion. I said, I'm trying to make it to the league. That's what every kid has, league dreams at some point when you're trying to come up. He's like, all right, cool. Like, you can do that. But what would you want to do? Like, your fallback or something after the game where it's you wake up every day and you don't hate your job because you don't want to be in that situation. And when he broke down how some people wake up every single day doing what they hate, I was like, I don't want that. So I'm like, all right, if I'm not going to play in the league, I at least want to be around the game and talk about it. So talking about sports was my obvious next option. And I was the class clown. I was the outgoing kid. I was the funny dude. I didn't mind performing. So it all just went together well. And that's how I came about the decision.
So you get out of school, and Curry, from what I understand, is a pretty solid broadcaster in school, right?
Yeah.
So you get out of school, and what was the journey to get there?
To ESPN?
I mean, let's try the stop before ESPN.
Iowa. Okay. Iowa or Michigan. All right, so when I graduated high school, I knew I wanted to do this, but as for a lot of kids out there, you're going to understand in this industry, you have to start in a low market in order to get to a higher one. You also have to leave home to be able to come back home. So I had a resume reel, and the resume reel was late. I probably realized I had to make one and get all this tape together late my junior year. And I applied for jobs. I couldn't get anything. Nobody really messed with it. And I'm like, okay. As I continue to apply, my professor hit me up and he said, Scooby, there's an opening at Boston 25 News. It was the Fox 25 at that time. But it was teleprompter worker. And I worked 3 a.m. to 11 a.m. just turning it off. And it was my foot in the door opportunity. So since nothing else was working, I'm like, I just need to get a chance to be in a room because you just have to find a way to get yourself on the team. And I got onto the Fox 25 team as a teleprompter worker, as a guy who graduated college on the dean's list, somebody who was in the communication program doing a lot of stuff. And when I got there, I went up to the sports department and I said, I'm only here because I'm trying to do what you're doing. So how can I get to where you are? And then from there on, Brian Selman, he knows who he is, my mentor till this day and my brother, he took me under his wing. And he began to show me the ropes, show me how to do everything. And I would shadow him. So after working 3 a.m. to 11 a.m., I would go to all the New England Patriot media days. I would go to every home game for the Patriots, Boston, Red Sox, Celtics. But the catch was I had to do that after I clocked out because my title is teleprompter worker. So that was my first job out of college for 19 months. And after shadowing him, he would let me go after him on the camera and do my own thing and kind of mimic, and he would coach me up, say it like this, do it like this, whatever it was. He calls me his protege, and he would just coach me up, and it went such a long way for me because he took the time out to teach me and to show me what he was doing, and from that, I was able to create a resume reel, which got me my first on-camera job.
Once again, big thanks to Scooby Magaza for dropping by. Every time I talk to him, I get a little extra inspired, and I hope you were too. All right. So to finish our time together, I'd like to address something that I actually did on the day I told y'all I wasn't going to record this podcast because it was Juneteenth. So even though I didn't record this, I did actually record something. Well, I didn't record it. It was live. But go with me. I was a part of a WFSB's Juneteenth special that aired live on that Monday. First off, to everybody that was a part of it, from Wendell to Bryant, Tracy Fury, our executive producer, Chris Wondolowski, who was in the booth for it, everybody that had anything to do with it, what a privilege to be on that journey with you. Thank you so much for being a part of it. You know, it really meant a lot to me. And it also gave me an opportunity to sort of examine myself and how I even saw the holiday, right? Because I'm a first-generation immigrant, right? Parents flew here from overseas. I've lived here my entire life. And I had only learned about Juneteenth really a few years ago. I mean, I didn't really get it into my consciousness, ironically, until I moved up here, which is further north than Texas, where the holiday originated. But the funny thing is, the more I read about it, the more I studied it, the more I appreciated why it's important to so many people and why it's important to me.
Because think about it, right? One of the lines that I remember from that special was said by Frederick Douglass when he said, "What to a slave is the 4th of July?" And that is how many Black Americans have seen the 4th of July, which is why Juneteenth is such a big deal. And the fact that it became a federal holiday is all well and good. But these are stories that before weren't being told. And I think I'll speak for myself. I think I owe it to you, really, to tell more of those stories all year long. There's no need for it to just be limited to one holiday, because this is really important. It really does dawn on me after some time, though, that there's a reason why people wish this holiday didn't exist, right? And I could be super nefarious about it. We could call it racism. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But it's always come with the sentiment that, all right, we get it. We heard about this already. No, you don't get it, and you haven't really heard about it all. Right, considering the fact that it was only 2 years ago that this became a federal holiday where you still have to pay attention to it to a certain point, in this supposed liberal state, 2023 was the first year that Connecticut recognized this holiday on a state level. Which is not a criticism, but it's to prove a point. That these stories that centering struggle, centering overcoming that struggle, and highlighting that that struggle is still going on, it's worth talking about. Like, people have trouble hitting the undo button on, like, their Word documents. Or, shoot, even in this job, right? I'll make a bad cut on a video. I'll hit undo as many times as I need to get it right. America talks about what a mistake slavery was, and I don't think the undo button has been hit once. Because the irony of what makes Juneteenth so special is that it came 2 years after the Emancipation Proclamation. That was apparently supposed to already have done the job. Like, just think about that for a second. And then add to that centuries of continually being considered less than human. And that's probably the kindest way chattel slavery has ever been referred to. Inhumane on every imaginable level, and yet we get a chance to tell the stories of those that came before us and to those who will hopefully continue to do the work. Sports is my passion. I'm holding on to it as long as I can. If I can tell these types of stories too, I'll sign up for it any day of the week. That is this week's show. Thank you for taking the time to join us. And I'm saying us because it's you and me here. Come on now, we're having a conversation. Or at bare minimum, you're listening to me talk. Either way, thank you very much for being a part of it. Well, we will be back next week. And the best part about it is it will drop on the actual Tuesday, not Wednesday this week. Because unless there's a holiday I don't know about, I don't know, feel free to let me know. Subscribe, rate, review, available wherever you get them. You'd think there's a formal ending to this. This is the formal ending. See you next week.